Progressive presents an interview with your upstairs neighbor.
Hey, it's Rick from upstairs.
Yeah, I take it seriously. When I play R&B at 1 in the morning, that's me saying, hey, I'm here for you. And I enjoy repetitive bass lines.
I only use expired batteries in my smoke detectors.
Nice, right?
Yeah, upstairs neighbors help people forget their troubles. Give them something else to focus on.
Ooh, want to see how high I can jump?
Progressive can't save you from your upstairs neighbor.
No, wait, let me try again.
But we can save you money when you bundle renters and auto insurance with us. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company affiliates and other insurers. Bundle discount not available in all states or situations.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to a Live Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi everyone, welcome back to Delhi Decoded. I'm Kritika Khanna, your host, and I'm here with your weekly update from the national capital. In this podcast, each episode, we pick a pin code from Delhi and dive into the most famous buildings, landmarks, and stories from that pin code. For those of you who are from Delhi, I'm sure you have some special memories from these places. For those of you who aren't, don't worry, I'll help you get a peek into the pulse of Delhi. Towards the end of last year, there were protests against the Citizenship Amendment Act across the country. A peaceful sit-in protest in the border of Delhi's Shaheen Bagh became the face of the protest across the country. This protest was different, as it was led by a group of women. Soon after the protests in Shaheen Bagh, similar protests were seen in various parts of the city and the country. The location of the protest raised concerns. The main road leads to Noida, which is a key suburb to Delhi and sees a lot of daily movement. For over 100 days, the lanes of Shaheen Bagh, which is very close to the Delhi-Uttar Pradesh border, were abuzz with activity. Even though the protests were led by women, you saw people, regardless of their differences, be it different religions, castes, or gender, come out to support the movement. You saw locals arrange for food or blankets for those protesting through the night. Just as 2020 was being brought in, lakhs of people in Delhi turned up to support the women who were sitting in protest through the night. Similar scenes were also seen throughout the 100 days that they sat in protest. With the cases of COVID-19 rising, the sit-in protest was brought to an abrupt end. To discuss the location and the whole protest, I have with me Stuti Govil, who is a PhD student in the Department of Geography at Rutgers University. Her research focuses on gender and public space in Delhi and has also recently published a paper on the Shaheen Bagh protests. Thank you so much for joining us today, Stuti.
Thanks, Pratika. Happy to.
So let me get straight to the questions. Even as protests against the Citizenship Amendment Act broke out across the country and several other parts of Delhi, there was an iconic protest in the border of Delhi in Shaheen Bagh. What are your thoughts on the protest that happened?
I think the Shaheen Bagh protest really came to signify, you know, this movement that started in maybe the end of November 2019 and continued well until into the year 2020. And I mean, obviously COVID-19 was a significant interruption into the physical protest, but I think the protest also lives on online, you know, it lives on in various ways. And the you know, Shaheen Bagh became this signature of the protest. It became the signature of the entire movement against the Citizenship Amendment Act in very revolutionary and very landmark ways. Like, we saw people from different factions, whether it's the right or the liberal kind of group or even the left, start to use Shaheen Bagh as metaphors. And it's very curious because everyone thought of it as a separate entity. Shaheen Bagh came to mean different things to everybody. And I think what's important is to remember that at its core, it is many things, but it is also a geographical spatial location. And so using the name Shaheen Bagh, which is the name of a locality in Delhi's Jamia Nagar, which is very close to Noida, it starts this entire conversation about where a protest is located, even, you know. So I think, and as a student of geography, I think those things become very important to look at. And in terms of what I think about the protest, like I said, you know, this was something that transcended different factions. It was something that became so landmark at when they were finally wrapped up because of COVID-19. They had already been sitting there for over 100 days. I think the last count was 105 days, 24/7. Yeah. It's a women-led protest. Those of us who have had the privilege to participate in the protest know how incredibly liberating and incredibly revolutionary and radical this felt. It's important to remember that this was a militant, nonviolent movement, and the kind of support that it garners from people across the internet, from people across borders. I can't tell you the number of times that Shaheen Bagh became a motif of conversation, even in my classes in the US. And, you know, people are reading, people are doing solidarity protests across the globe. I think I attended two just in New York, and I like helped organize one in my university at Rutgers. And it's just this point of rupture almost, you know, where so much has been going on for so many decades now. And the CAA kind of represented a point of break where it's like, no, you know, now you're denying us our reality. You're denying us, or you propose to deny us our citizenship. So that became this kind of space when, you know, this is it. Now we take matters into our own hands.
Yeah. One of the things that you mentioned right now was the location of the protest, which, as you said as well, is very, mm-hmm. very interesting, because it's it's a very prominent road as such of Delhi. Mm-hmm. It's a major connection point between Delhi and UP. Mm-hmm. In that sense, can you sort of describe what the location of the protest and what the scene was at the time?
Sure. So Shaheen Bagh is something, I mean, I've spent all my life in Delhi. I was born there. I still am from Delhi. So I know Delhi like the back of my hand, right? And yet, until the end of 2019, I had never heard of Shaheen Bagh. And most people that I went to school with, most people that, you know, I meet on a day-to-day basis have a similar experience, where we went from never having heard about Shaheen Bagh as a locality, as a neighborhood, we went from that to practically being obsessed with it. You know, now you can't say Shaheen Bagh. When you Google Shaheen Bagh, the number of hits for the protests are immense. Like, it runs into thousands, the number. There are so many articles, there's so many pieces, there's so many opinions. But when you try to look at the neighborhood of Shaheen Bagh, there's much less, because it emerged, you know, the moment of protest and the movement cannot be separated from the locality. And so, of course, like you mentioned, Pritika, the location is important, yes, because it is so centrally connected between Delhi and Noida. And the blockade of that one road became the focal point. So I know that there was a petition in the Delhi High Court through many kinds of resident welfare groups and stuff that were asking for that road to no longer be blockaded. Or a lot of liberals or a lot of people were writing about, why don't you protest in a park? And the response of people living in Shaheen Bagh or the organizers were, but you kept the parks to yourself. We don't have parks in Shaheen Bagh. And I think that represents this ethos of the movement itself, you know, that the kind of lack of infrastructural access, making people not, like, deliberately almost denying access to infrastructure to people based on what mm-hmm. locality they're from. So Green Park will have a lot of parks, obviously. Different localities in and around. Okhla, which is close to Shaheen Bagh, has a lot of open space. But similar clusters in Jamia Nagar, like Shaheen Bagh, do not have the luxury of open space. And so they're kind of taking over one road, which is also, like, curiously, the protesters of Shaheen Bagh didn't block the road. The police did, because they wanted to avoid any scuffles, because it was such a tense moment. But even there, you know, if we can call it their peaceful occupation, which is a nice kind of term to use. But even if we were to say that they peacefully occupied a road, I think we have to look at why couldn't they protest at a park? Because they don't have parks. And this also large, like, you know, it speaks to this idea of ghettoization that is so present in Delhi. When I visited the protest site, you know, I had no idea how to get to Shaheen Bagh. I asked a few friends and they said, you know, we take the metro till Jasola and then you get off and then you walk till somewhere. And I don't know, I think at that point I took an Uber and like, we were trying to get into the Uber and the Uber driver said, Madam, yahan ka mahol bahut kharab hai. The situation is really bad here. And, you know, of course, a number of Ubers had cancelled on us before that. So we had to walk a certain length. And as we were walking through this place, I always have my geographer's eyes. So I just couldn't help but notice that this was not a poor area, you know, as for want of a better word. But this was a fairly well-to-do area. Like, there were cars, there were fancy cars in various buildings, but it was also extremely congested. It was extremely, there were narrow lanes. Maybe in the front of Shaheen Bagh were bigger, newer apartment complexes. And as you went inside the alleys, you started seeing that the kind of, it was almost like a descending order of class. You know, you could see that even in this locality, there were apartments or buildings for richer people and then shanty and makeshift houses for people that couldn't afford it. And the thing that sort of, the thing that was common between all of these people was them being Muslim. And so this idea of, you know, Muslim ghettoization in contemporary India becomes even more prominent and it becomes even more stark for us to see. And I was talking about this idea of infrastructural access. So of course that we're talking about parks, but you know, as we were spending more time with Shaheen Bagh, I started talking to a friend who, when they, and you know, this is a Muslim man. So, and when he first moved to Delhi, he was obviously, and we know these stories again, right? Of Muslim friends being denied apartments and accommodation in Delhi. And so this person said that they could only find accommodation to rent in Shaheen Bagh. And this is a person who's a journalist, so well-to-do, all of those things, right? Can afford, like has a certain amount of purchasing power. And they said that every year in the monsoon, because there's lack of sewage facilities, so because there is infrastructural neglect, every year because of that, water would seep into everybody's houses. And how you could differentiate class in Shaheen Bagh was that if you were poor, you had to do it yourself. And you literally took out seepage and sewage water from your house in buckets. But if you were slightly, you know, more privileged or more well-to-do, then you could hire one of these people to do that for you. And so this infrastructural neglect also becomes a kind of state violence that's imposed. And that's, I think all of these things are things that we need to consider even as we talk about Shaheen Bagh, the protests, because it's not separated from the spatial dynamics. And similar other protests that happened in Delhi, so whether it's Seelampur or whether it's near Tughlakabad, all of these protests share a similar ethos. And if we trace those infrastructural kinds of, you know, access, I think a very rich narrative starts to come up.
That's very true. And another very important narrative that came out from this protest was the fact that this was the first time we saw such a powerful movement being led by women.
Yeah, that's right.
And, you know, this was also, as you have also pointed out, this was the first time we saw Muslim women become the forefront of resistance.
Absolutely.
What do you think that does to the discourse?
So I think there are many things. I think one of the biggest thing that has come out of the Shaheen Bagh protests has been this idea of feminist commoning, you know, so the notion of making a public place, almost like a commons project, right? Where that same protest site became simultaneously a daycare center. It became a place where people were cooking together. All they were asking for was dialogue with the government, with the central government, and the home minister. And it became this very, and that's why I keep saying it's revolutionary. That's why, you know, we find it so revolutionary, because these are methods and modes of protest that we haven't seen in India so far. 100+ days of in independent India and contemporary independent India, in our lifetime at least, we've not seen this, right? Where 100+ days of peaceful sit-in protest, which at last count, I think over 50 such protests were inspired by Shaheen Bagh across India. And many of them lasted, you know, for a significant long time. Again, because of COVID-19, these protests had to be moved from their physical kind of spaces. But yeah, so this idea of feminist commoning and this idea of women leading the protest. So even when you actually visit the protest site, you see all of these. As I was walking into Shaheen Bagh, I saw a bunch of young women. They were coming out from within the depths of Shaheen Bagh. And one of them said, and I'll translate it, but one of them said, "Main nara lagaun, mujhe man kar raha hai." And so she basically she was saying, "Should I do the sloganeering? I really feel like it today." And she started, and then she said, "Hum leke rahenge azadi." And the calls of azadi just echoing in predominantly women's voices. Is just something else, you know, it's just a sight to behold. In one of the New York protests that I was mentioning that I'd visited, there's this group called Equality Labs, and a spokeswoman for them said that a lot of people are now saying that, you know, Muslim women are finally speaking up, but the Equality Lab spokesperson said, "No, actually, Muslim women have been speaking up forever. It's just that now you're listening to us." And that is such a powerful statement, right? There's been a lack of voice. There's been a lack of platform. And Shaheen Bagh was a literal platform that Muslim women created for themselves. And not just Muslim women, because, you know, as the movement went on, it became a large kind of, there were so many cross sections of solidarity from different groups. But as the, you know, the creation of this platform themselves, and to give voice to people that have historically lacked a voice, especially in these kinds of large scale political decisions, I think was the biggest success of the Shaheen Bagh movement. And independent India's history is peppered with instances where Muslim women have traditionally been used either as vote banks or politics of appeasement have been played with them. But this is something that where they're saying, you know, we want dialogue. We want to be involved in this process. How could you tell us that we have, like, how could you impose the CAA on us like this? Talk to us. Mm-hmm. And so taking that voice back, I think, was something incredible. And yeah, and, you know, they organized this protest, and it became there. It's also important to note that this is a leaderless protest, right? It's not, it doesn't have a leader. I think within the first 10 days, so the feminist commoning really comes out.
That's very, very true. You know, this was such a powerful movement. We saw it, as you said, it went on for over 100 days, and you know, there was support that came in from all over. What do you think this does for women's movement in general, for the country especially, because we've not seen so many so far?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And I think that, I mean, of course, it's a bit early to answer that question. But I think it speaks. So I think the way to think about it as a almost like a renaissance. So almost the beginning of conversations around women's participation in politics. This, like you said, Pritika, there's been so much resonance. You know, people have really resonated with not just the women of Shaheen Bagh, but also their protest modes. And also, you know, it's not a hyper-local contest, right? It's not a hyper-local kind of problem. They're saying, they're asking to be involved as voices within political process. And so I think it speaks to
Very true.
Yeah, it speaks to, I think, this kind of minority acknowledgement. And just saying that, you know, one, women are not minority, and two, Muslim women particularly, even if you consider them a minority in the demographic sense of the word, doesn't mean that their sort of political opinions are to be disregarded. And Shaheen Bagh saw so much, you know, so much support all through social media that it almost became synonymous with social media protests, with Facebook, with Twitter, with Instagram. So Instagram really came out big as a protest mode. And I think every year, every major protest always has some aspect of that. So like the Egyptian revolution became called a Twitter revolution, or a revolution that unfolded on Twitter. But I think, so the other thing to remember is that, you know, international movements like the Me Too movement have reached India in different cycles, where journalists or even people like us have used social media as a form of catharsis, as a form of talking about sexual harassment. But unfortunately, for whatever, you know, because of the nature of the internet, this movement never reached women that didn't have access to the internet, women that didn't have access to English-speaking spaces of the internet. And so there was always something lacking, right? India is not composed only of women that have access to Twitter. India is composed of myriad kinds of people. And so this movement opens up that conversation. This movement shows you that something that is peaceful, something that is non-violent, and something that makes these demands to do, you know, discursive dialogue with the government can become so powerful. Even the ways in which the movement has been used by the right, I think, are fascinating, because they're scared. You know, they're scared. They label it various things. They say things like, "In mahilaon ke pati kahan hai? Inka pati nahi hai. Iska matlab ye kya kar rahi hai?" Which just, you know, asking where are their husbands? Why are their husbands not part of this? And obviously, it's not legitimate if their husbands are not part of it. Well, if you visit the Shaheen Bagh site, you will see that there are all kinds of men also, except that the main stage area is left for women alone, because they're the real champions of this protest.
Very true. On that note, thank you so much for joining us today, Stuti.
Thank you so much for having me, Pratika. Thank you.
That's all from me this week. I'll be back next week with a new PIN code. Until then, please like, subscribe, and share this episode. We're always looking to hear your thoughts and suggestions. We're ever present on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at HT Smartcast. You can also reach out to me directly on Twitter at Pritika Khanna. Thank you so much for joining in. See you next time. Until then, stay safe and healthy.
This was a Live Mint production, brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Miles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.